Welcome to the DermVet Podcast. I'm Dr. Ashley Bourgeois, a board-certified veterinary dermatologist practicing in Portland, Oregon with animal dermatology clinics. I'm also a mom of two, just trying to find the balance like everyone else. Let's learn to ditch the itch, cytology, everything, and make derm more fun than frustrating.
Did you know that ophthalmology and dermatology actually cross over quite a bit? I am so excited to have Dr. Alex Zygmunt on the podcast today. You may know him as the Vet Eye Guy on Instagram, and he actually provides some teleconsulting, and you can reach out through him on that Instagram account. We had a really wonderful discussion just talking about some of the crossover we see between allergic conjunctivitis, some other diseases, his take on managing corneal ulcers, and really just getting some insight on how we can better manage these cases that have chronic eye disease. So please enjoy this episode of the DermVet Podcast. Well, thanks everyone for joining me for another episode of the DermVet Podcast. I'm always excited to have guests on, but very excited to be connected to this lovely individual, Dr. Alex Zygmunt, who is an ophthalmologist. And I will admit, eyes scare me. I find them gross once you get to the actual eye. So I'm very thankful we have ophthalmologists who can help us take care of the eye. So thank you so much for being on the podcast today, Alex. We're very excited to have you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited. I love dermatology as well.
Do you?
I do.
So what specialty do you not like?
I actually had a really hard time picking it. What specialty I wanted to do in vet school because I liked everything so much.
You're one of those.
Yeah, but then ophthalmology actually provides you kind of a little bit of everything because we do get to do a little bit of derm, we do get to do surgery, and we do cancer stuff, and we do internal medicine, so you get to do a little bit of everything.
Well, that's a really good point. I should say when I joke like I don't like eyes, like it wasn't my most hated specialty. I always said I like didn't really love cardio, like just being in a dark room, like doing echoes all day. I think I'm too extroverted. Like I would just remember like hours of doing it in my internship and just being like, I want to go. And neuro, like whenever I was doing ER and there was like a seizure coming in, I just like was not my most excited thing to deal with. It's like, well, we're either going to do like lab work and you're going to be done seizing and, you know, we're going to say, well, follow up with your primary vet, or you're going to still be seizing and then you're gonna be really difficult. So I don't want to deal with that.
Then that's on refer to neuro.
Right. Please refer. Well, you know, as we were kind of talking a little before we hopped on, there can be a lot of crossover with our specialties. And I actually do feel like if I think of specialists who refer a decent amount of stuff to us, you know, really all of them to some degree, but we have a lot of ophthalmologists in our area that do refer cases to us. As we kind of joke about, you know, there's the eye, but there's the skin around the eye. And so, you know, in what situation do we really think of sending those cases to each other? So what do you feel like are the most common cases that get referred to you, you being an ophthalmologist, that maybe you'd look at and say, I really think you should go see derm?
So the cases that are going to come to me, they're coming with the clinical signs of epiphora, so drainage, tear drainage, or they have, you know, periocular alopecia. Even just conjunctival hyperemia, so just some eye redness that quote unquote won't go away. And, you know, these veterinarians have ruled out a bunch of the main things. And if they haven't, then I rule out other potential causes. So, you know, are things like dry eye and glaucoma, things like that. So if we can kind of rule out all that stuff, we're left with maybe an allergy. And so then that's when part of the history does include, like, are there any skin problems? You know, I can look at a dog a lot of times and see, do they have, you know, hyperemic skin, like lichenification, or they're just sitting there scratching, you know, in the room. Then those are the cases where I start to, my flag starts to kind of go up, antenna goes up about allergies. And then I kind of start my preemptive therapy, presumptive therapy for allergies. And then if those are not responding very well, then we're talking about doing more diagnostics or seeing a dermatologist,
And do you feel like that happens to you on a somewhat regular amount where you see a case and you do feel like it's related to some sort of underlying derm issue rather than a primary ophthalmic issue?
I feel like probably in my experience, the one, because you don't have to have like systemic like atopic dermatitis or some, you know, something along those lines to have ocular signs. You can just have ophthalmic, you know, allergy signs. So, you know, it really just depends. If I see that they really have a problem with their skin, or, you know, they have chronic ear infections, or they also have GI disease, you know, and this all kind of nebulous stuff, I'm definitely the one that sits there and we're going to kind of talk about all those different things. That kind of is where I get my fix with doing not just ophthalmology, because, you know, I talk about food, you know, I talk about flea and tick preventative sometimes. Like I, you know, heart disease, you know, we do delve into those things because they can, you know, enter the room, you know, when we're talking about certain eye things as well. So I'm definitely don't shy away from any of those discussions, but I definitely am like, now, if this doesn't work, what I'm going to give you right now, then you need to see the dermatologist, you know, and I think probably one of the unfortunate things about our area is that we have like maybe two dermatologist options. And that's, I'm in Atlanta, so there's a ton of people. It's the South. People have white dogs and they have Frenchies. And so there's allergies abounding and those places get really booked up. So I've even prescribed Apoquel once, you know, just because this dog was suffering. And I was like, I think this is going to be fine. I'm giving you a week until, or, you know, however long, just so you can get in to see somebody, or at least see your vet, so they can kind of take the suck over. Because I definitely try not to, you know, get too far out of my depth. Because there's a lot to
know. Did you feel nervous prescribing it?
This was a relatively young dog, so, and she's otherwise was fine. And I personally have had family pets on Apoquel for very long periods of time, and so I wasn't too worried with this kind of shorter course. But for chronic maintenance, I was like, you need to talk to someone who knows more than I do.
It's really funny, I feel like, you know, between our different specialties, because I remember talking to someone, I think they were like in an ER clinic, but they did not want to prescribe Apoquel. Like they were too nervous about it. And I was like, what are you nervous about? Like, you know, we have thousands of dogs that are on it probably chronically, but it's just what you know, right? And so they were like, oh, well, I just don't know. I'm like, you prescribe like crazy things. Like you're worried about prescribing that. But I think it's just, you know, kind of like me with eye stuff. If I have to prescribe something for the eyes, I'm always like, can there be a steroid in the eye drop? Can there not be a steroid in the eye drop? I don't know. Like, are we allowed to do steroids in the eye drop for this disease or are we not? Like, are you going to rupture your globe on me? So I think it's just like what we're comfortable with. But that's really cool that you're kind of really, I really try to dive into some of that stuff too. You know, in dermatology, we obviously can also kind of bleed into a lot of other specialties just because the skin covers the body. But, you know, when we start dealing with things like food issues, there is a point where I will be like, you know, time out. I think you need to see internal medicine. Like we are getting to the point where this may be above and beyond just food indiscretion causing allergic skin disease. So I will really do the things I feel comfortable with that I think are reasonable for that pet. But then there is a point where I'm like, we might be dealing with something a little bit above and beyond what I would deal with. Like you might need intestinal biopsies, like things that I'm not going to do. So I think that's cool that you're kind of willing to dive into that stuff, because we do see a lot of stuff that kind of goes specialty to specialty. You had a dog yesterday in the clinic that I was like the third specialist, you know, managing multiple diseases on this pet. So you mentioned periocular dermatitis, and I do feel like that's one of the main things that when I get a case from ophthalmology that they say, well, this is actually the skin around the eye, not the eye, so you should see derm. So if we really bridge into talking about periocular dermatitis or alopecia, like what do you think are some of the more common things that you see? Obviously, allergies are going to be one of them, cause those issues.
Yeah. You know, I think periocular alopecia, you know, like you said, the main thing that I start to think of with hyperemic skin that's kind of maybe a little thickened would be allergies. They can also get that from just excoriation. So if they have an ulcer that they've been rubbing at, you know, I see it for that reason too. So when I see an ulcer and periocular signs, then I'm like, which, you know, chicken or egg, which one came first? Did you do this to yourself? Or did you get an ulcer because you were rubbing, because you're itchy? And that's where, you know, have they been wearing an e-collar? You know, are there any other things that could have contributed or prevented, helped rule out, you know, some of these differentials? We'll also see like staph infections around the eyes, where they'll have kind of, in my world, we'll say like an allergic reaction to their own staph. And so we will, you know, prescribe like a course of doxycycline in order to try and clear some of that up to see if that's a contributing factor versus just atopy. But usually, you know, if they're, I'm looking at the whole dog as far as those, like I mentioned before, about any other skin signs, chronic ear infections, anything in their history that could point towards seasonality, you know, anything like that that could point more towards we're dealing with atopy versus, you know, something else, one of those other differentials.
And do you, so something else that, you know, for listeners, I would say, especially in younger dogs, that we can see cause, and this is probably something that the general practitioners see or that we see more than you would see, but we can see demodicosis cause periocular alopecia at times. We don't see that very much anymore. My colleague last week had a case of Demodex and we were all like squealing and trying to look at it because the isoxazolines have kind of taken that away from us, which is a good thing for pets, not so much fun for us. But that is something that sometimes we can see there too, because the periocular region can be not super exciting to want a skin scrape. We'll often do like trichograms and actually pluck those hairs and look, because I don't want to do an accidental corneal ulcer myself and send them to you because I did it. But that's something that we can also see cause that area. Another disease, I don't see this often.
Are there
often.
An age group more so for
that
the
I would suspect that in? Mm-hmm. So I would say, and usually it's dogs that are under a year of age, because their immune system developing, maybe for various reasons they're not on, you know, prevention yet, or older dogs that have an underlying issue that is suppressing their immune system. So I have seen it in like a hyperadrenocorticism dog that was not worked up or controlled, develop kind of periocular alopecia related to that. I had a Cocker Spaniel a couple years ago. She didn't just have around the periocular. That was one of the worst areas, but then she had a couple little like furuncles kind of on her muzzle too, but she was definitely mostly facial. But I would say it kind of tends to be either that really young age, we're developing, we got juvenile demodicosis, or we're older, there's some underlying, you know, neoplasia or endocrinopathy that's suppressing our immune system, and then we develop demodicosis. So I'd probably say for me, those are the two big ones. And then the other thing sometimes, I don't see this often, but we'll get autoimmune diseases that can kind of cause swelling or, you know, alopecia around the eyes. So I don't know if you've ever seen like pyogranulomatous blepharitis or anything like that. Do you see that in your world? Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
It's like
they're kind of cool because you make them feel better really quickly.
Oh, they respond so quickly. And I will say this is, I would say it's an emerging condition in ophthalmology because, you know, there's nothing written up about like a pyogranulomatous conjunctivitis or blepharitis in our field. So, but I definitely know several people and I probably have maybe like 3 to 5 cases, I would say, that they've been diagnosed with pyogranulomatous eyelid disease, whether it's from the conjunctivitis or skin, on biopsies that the vets have done, because these eyelids look, I mean, like chewed up meat. I mean, it looks so horrible. And then you put them on steroids and like literally a week later, they just look normal. And then the question is like, what's their long-term therapy gonna look like for them?
And do you feel like you usually have to treat them more long-term? Because I do in mine. And I always wonder in some of the cases I see, because I have seen some, I have like a little Papillon who literally that is like her only skin disease is she'll break out. I think I biopsied her a couple years ago. She's been super well controlled now for quite a while. But hers would just get like really swollen, angry, like you're kind of mentioning. And then I've had a couple other ones where they'll have that, we'll manage it, we'll biopsy it. But then they'll also kind of have some other underlying allergic skin disease. And I don't know if that plays a role or not. But do you feel most of these you have to keep on treatment long term? Like it's not something you treat and then we're through?
Correct. I definitely caution the owners that you're likely looking at long term therapy for these dogs. You know, I try and get them under control, wean down the steroid. I always give them a chance, I will say. I try and give them a chance just to see, because I also don't have much information about this disease in our field. So, you know, I wean down their steroids, see if they flare back up at some point, and then we'll get them back under control if they flare back up. And then usually I'm adding on a secondary immunomodulator. I've tried, because our people in our field have like azathioprine. I don't have a ton of experience with azathioprine. I've used it, I think, on two of the dogs that I've seen, and it's such a long lag time that I don't know. I just didn't see much response even once we got past the lag time, and so I ended up switching those dogs to cyclosporin, and they've done great on the cyclosporin. And I think one of them is on cyclosporin, but also like a really, really low dose of steroid, just because he would have like minor little flare-ups without it. So it's just definitely something we have to muddle our way through a little bit, which I feel bad about, but I'm definitely very honest with the owners about, we don't really know. So here we go. And hopefully this will do well. But usually the dogs are doing well once we start therapy.
I feel like I tend to lean towards cyclosporin as well. Like when they end up in our field, I'm very similar. Like I'll start steroids, get them under control. They usually look awesome pretty quickly. And then the question is like, how low can I get that steroid down before they start to show any signs? But quite a few of mine, I feel like, do well on cyclosporin. You know, azathioprine, we use it, I wouldn't say a ton, but definitely in some of our really difficult like pemphigus cases and things like that, we use it. But it is a waiting period. Like it is kind of tough. Like you have to tell owners, like, one, we're going to have to monitor a lot of lab work, because the way that our protocol is we check lab work every 2 weeks. Because I've absolutely had the liver values go sky high and we have to stop. And also you're kind of like playing that delicate dance of still on higher steroids, you know, for those 2 months while you're waiting to see if it works or not. And then sometimes when you finally get through those 2 months, it's amazing, but you're kind of like going up, down, like you're kind of playing a chess match with the steroids because you're trying to get them lower on steroids, but they're not ready yet. So it can be a nice tool to have, but it's not a drug that I try to use because of the side effects that it can have.
Yeah. Oh, I was going to say, our dose that has been circulated on our ophthalmology listservs has also is like a quarter of what I think people usually started at. Like, I think people do like 1 to 2 or something mix per kg. Mm-hmm. And we're like 0.5 mix per kg. And it's like 0.5 for 7 days and then drop it down. And I'm always afraid to go a little bit higher just because I do know about those side effects. And so that could definitely be a reason why I haven't seen as much response, is that I've been maybe too chicken to increase the dose, but I have more experience with cyclosporin. So I do. And it doesn't have as much of a lag time.
Totally reasonable. I mean, so what I usually do is either 2 mg/kg, or 50 mgs per meter squared. Like if it's a bigger dog, I'll go by body surface area instead. And then it depends on the tablet size and where they fall, right? And some people like will go daily for a bit and then go to every other day. Usually we'll kind of start daily. It also depends on how bad the disease is. I would say the one disease I've actually seen it, I feel like, used in more that would be our two specialties would be uveo dermatologic syndrome. I have seen some that have come in, either another dermatologist has managed them and they move and they want us to kind of continue that care, or opto has seen them, because usually that is more of an ocular. Like if they come to see us, we're like, no, you see opto first. Do you have any experience with that disease?
I do. They don't go well, unfortunately.
No, I know. It's a sucky disease.
It really is. One of my mentors I used to work with, she would just immediately put them on 3 immunosuppressants just right out the gate. And she thinks that she had, you know, fairly good, I think good success, meaning that they probably made it a year, year and a half or something without losing vision, just because it pretty much inevitably causes glaucoma in both eyes because of chronic uveitis and or retinal detachments. And then they, you know, lose their vision pretty quickly after that.
Yeah, but it's a tough disease.
I have this one case from when I was a rotating intern, and it was a black lab, and he's literally turning white, like his whole body was turning white. And I have photographs of him, you know, and in the first picture, he has both eyes. At the second picture, he only has one eye. And in the last picture, he doesn't have any eyes. But once the eyes were gone, he seemed very happy. He didn't have any ulcerative skin disease. It was just what's the word I'm looking for?
Like vitiligo?
It wasn't skin, but the hair, when hair turned white.
Leukotrichia?
Yeah, I guess that's
you go with that.
But yeah, that's all he had. So then he was able to kind of come off therapy, if you will, or at least go down on therapy since he wasn't in pain. And the only issue that is painful in my eyes, as long as they don't have ulcerative skin disease, is their eyes. So,
yeah. Yeah, it is. It is a really tough disease for those of you listening who don't know about this disease. We don't. It's not super common. You probably see it the most of anybody. I've
probably
maybe
seen
one
four
or two
time. Four.
Okay.
In
so
like
not even that
7
much.
7 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. You know, there are certain breeds that we can see it a bit more in, but it's almost like they're reacting to some of like their pigmented cells, and so it's primarily a ocular emergency. We'll often see them because they start depigmenting and ulcerating, like you mentioned. But yeah, if you see an Akita or something that's starting to lose pigment and their eyes are going in a bad direction, like you definitely should have that listed. And it is a tough disease. I've seen a couple that have been fairly well controlled that have kept their eyes, but I don't know if maybe they were more of in a dermatologic state. You know, it was more ones I was following up on because they had been on treatment, but they were on a lot of treatment just to keep them doing well, like doing okay.
The ones I've seen on chronic therapy don't look great.
Yeah,
like muscle wasting and all that stuff. And just interestingly, ocular signs do tend to occur first in uveo dermatologic mm-hmm. syndrome, because the eye is actually the most densely pigmented organ of your body.
Oh, well, that's like a nice little trivia fact.
Yeah, and uveo dermatologic syndrome in people is called VKH, or Voigt Coronata Haraggi syndrome. And they'll have like a neural or neuro component because there are or there's melanin along the optic nerves and certain other nerves in our systems that create these signs from that, which dogs don't have melanin in those tissues. So they tend not to have the neurologic, or tinnitus is kind of one of the other ones, an ear ringing. We dogs don't seem to have any of that.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Yes, I always like shy away from what VKH is, because I remember I used to know it so well when I was taking boards, and now I'm always like, what are those? What does that stand for again? So let's move to something a bit more common, because actually, as I've been following you a lot, so for those who don't know, Alex has a wonderful Instagram called The Vet Eye Guy. And one of the ones that clearly caught my attention you've done recently was about allergic conjunctivitis and treatment for that. Because a lot of times when we have cases that come into derm or managing their allergies, say they're on immunotherapy and Apoquil, things are going fairly well, but it's spring, you know, owners will mention just like, oh, they're getting like allergic conjunctivitis, or they're kind of red in their eyes, or they're just getting a little bit of drainage. And, you know, I'll kind of mention antihistamine eye drops. I don't really like know that much about what to do with that aspect unless I do refer them. But you had a wonderful post talking about some of your preferences in those cases. So tell me a little bit about how you manage these cases of allergic conjunctivitis, whether it's antihistamine eye drops. Do you ever move to things like steroid eye drops in severe cases?
Yeah, I feel like most of the time I do start with a topical steroid because a lot of these dogs have already gone through therapy before they come to me, and their conjunctivitis has worsened or just hasn't gone away. And a lot of times I feel like, you know, veterinary general practitioners will start the correct, relatively, you know, correct therapy, but they only do it for, you know, maybe it's once a day for 7 days because they're a little scared about using the steroid, you know, more long term or something like that, which is very reasonable to be cautious with steroids. But a lot of these dogs need, you know, 2 to 4 times a day of like Neopolydex or Predacetate in order to really beat back that inflammation. And then while they're doing that, I actually go ahead and put them on a topical antihistamine, mast cell stabilizer, whatever you want to call them, where I've had probably the most experience with Pataday, which is olopalidine. And they come in a lot of different concentrations. I think there's a once daily, a twice daily, and an extra strength. And then there's Zaditor, which is that one, Ketoprofen, I think.
I think so. And that's the one that we'll often use, which you said was maybe like your second choice in your post.
Second one, I kind of offer both, frankly, just because admittedly in ophthalmology, we don't have much literature on allergic conjunctivitis in dogs. We have just a couple papers. And only one of them is actually looking at treatment, where they basically did a conjunctivitis model in these dogs and put them on the extra strength olopalidine, which I think is like 0.3%, which is more than the other ones. And they found that there was probably more of a prophylactic effect rather than an effect from treating active disease. So they would like stimulate these dogs, put them on Pataday, and then see what happened. And those dogs didn't really do very much. But if they were pre-treated, then they had a better efficacy with the Pataday later. So in my mind, I feel like those antihistamines are just really weak. And we need to, there's all this other inflammation going on. So we just need to beat back that inflammation with steroids. And once it gets to a lower severity, if you will, then we'll, you know, hopefully have on this other antihistamine to kind of carry us the rest of the way while we taper off the steroids. So I routinely use topical steroids. It's always with the, you know, caution to the owners. If they have any worsening of signs at all, if you're worried about anything whatsoever, call us and, you know, I would get them in immediately that day just to check for an ulcer, you know, see if anything was progressing in the wrong direction. Because there's a canine herpes virus that can mimic allergic conjunctivitis. And if you put them on steroids, they'll get worse and they can flare up with an ulcer. And so I feel like a lot of my discussions with owners have to do with, we're going to use our therapy as a diagnostic and then go from there. Because otherwise I'm not going to biopsy certain things and certain tissues. I can't biopsy safely, or it's not worth the biopsy. So, you know, a lot of owners want to do less invasive things first. And so I'm like, well, here's some drops. And then depending on how your pet responds, that'll help dictate kind of what direction we're going in.
I feel like that kind of is the same mentality you take with some of these cats that get, you know, facial disease, maybe they're itchy, and they keep being told, well, they have feline herpes and they will put them on certain therapies to treat that. They won't get better. And I'll say, well, maybe this is actually allergic dermatitis. And I'll reach for something like a steroid, like a steroid trial. But I'm the same. I'm like, if it worsens at all, I have to know. But often they like do amazing. And we've just kind of blamed that it was something like feline herpes virus, just based on it being more facial. So I totally feel you on that. Like, it's like, it's a hard disease. You can try to look for inclusion bodies. You can try your best to find things. But sometimes I feel like some of these pets just never fully get their treatment because people are so worried about it, which totally reasonable. But at the same time, if things are just progressively getting worse, you know, we need to reach for things that maybe could treat them, as long as you have an owner who's really astute and will kind of keep you in the loop. You know, it depends on the owner for sure. You did mention like topical steroids. So something I see often done is, you know, something like Neopolydex, especially if they have like, you know, periocular like inflammation, that they'll get sent home with Neopolydex and kind of just told like, use it as needed or use it when you need to, or, you know, use it once or twice daily long term. Yeah, I see you're shaking your head. So that's what I want to ask you, because I've always been a bit nervous to do that. You know, at that point, if I'm having to treat the ocular disease that much, I feel like I probably should get them to go see opto. But what are kind of your feelings when that is prescribed like that?
There just needs to be a plan. I think that a lot of cases have come to me and there's just no real plan for the therapy that they've been on. And that affects, I think, how efficacious everything is, because owners are going to stop and start therapy when we know that there are certain conditions that if you just stop steroids, it'll flare up even worse, you know, afterwards. Then owners, you know, don't feel like they know what they're doing. You know, is what they're doing actually helping? And then things can get missed because they're, you know, kind of all over the place. But I always try to just lay out a plan. So we're going to do this for 2 weeks. We're going to do twice a day for one, once a day for one. And then if it's not better, call me, you know, and then we just have to set up these checkpoints, because if you just release them into the wild with some medications, they start doing some crazy things because, you know, they don't know and they haven't had the proper guidance. So that falls on us as their veterinarians to just educate them and to let them know that they're not alone in this whole thing. I'm not just sending you off. You can contact me. We can talk about this and work up other plans. Because, you know, there's so many different options that we can go in a lot of cases. It just depends on what the owners are willing to do. You know, what we think from our clinical experience, what research says, all that stuff. So there's lots of different routes. A lot of times, not every time, but a lot of times, a lot of different routes. So we just need a plan moving forward. So I don't like the just use this, especially a steroid, I would say. Same thing with antibiotics. You know, if you're here's your ofloxacin for your ulcer that's not infected, which is another pet peeve of mine. And you can just use that as you want to. And owners will come in and be like, well, I just give them ofloxacin maybe 2 times a week. And it seems to help with blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, it's not helping. Something else is going on. And that just all has to do with them not knowing exactly what the plant is.
Yes, I love in our respective specialties, we always have the little triggers, right? And I could tell some of the things that, like, I'm the same. There's certain things where I'm just like, oh, but why? And it's like, I get it. Like a general practitioner, like, gosh, they're honestly, I feel like some of them should be some of the most respected.
Absolutely.
Part of the reason I specialize is because
there
are a lot of things I'm not good at. Yeah, like, and now I can, and I always like say when I'm lecturing, I'm like, I can punt things, right? I can be like, well, I don't know, but I don't really deal with that. So you go see them. And you, and general practitioners can't always do that. You know, not everyone will be willing to see a specialist. So I totally understand and get it. And that's why I like putting this content out there, is just hearing some of the stuff that maybe, you know, we get in habits of doing that aren't maybe the right things to do. So talking about like steroid usage, so you mentioned not just saying like letting them use as needed. Do you have a stop point where you'll only let them use topical steroids around the eyes a certain amount of time? Do you have cases where they have to be on that long-term indefinitely?
There are certain cases that do need to be on the topical steroid long-term. I feel like typically those are going to be the chronic superficial keratitis, German Shepherds, or pannus, plasmoma. Those are definitely an immune-mediated disease. And those dogs may need a topical steroid, like, you know, twice a week, once a week, you know, something like that, just to kind of hold it down. And so those clients, they've gone through so much. I feel like a lot of these pandas cases have been through so much that when they come to me, they're very astute. You know, they know what they're supposed to be looking for. And I don't want them to just be like, well, it's a little bit, they call me and say, it's a little bit red. Can I get in today? I was like, well, we know why it's probably red. You know, do you see anything else? Does this look like it has the last 3 times? And, you know, I do try to empower the owners in those certain cases, just to kind of save them time and money, especially when they're so familiar with the condition because they've been dealing with it for a while. So that's really probably the only case that I would say, or something similar, some of those immune-mediated diseases, where I'll kind of turn the owners a little bit loose, but it's after we've gone through a lot together. There's been a lot of education the whole way. I feel like for allergies, you know, I give them probably 2 weeks on a topical steroid, and I think in humans, they'll do it 3 to 4 weeks. I think as long as they're not just being released, you know, someone's checking in on them, they're checking with you, you could probably go up to 4 weeks later. But for me, I'm like, I'm going to check in with you in 2 weeks. You know, we're going to call or email you, and you're going to send us pictures, and we'll kind of do something like that. But kind of for the run of the mill person, 2 weeks on a topical steroid without you would need a checkup by then.
Sure. That's totally fair.
As long as things are going well.
Yes. Well, isn't that true for most of our like long-term cases? That's when I always like set a recheck. You know, we're also, and especially where it's a lot of education. And whenever I set a recheck, like, okay, we, you know, have done great together. This looks great. I feel like we're on a good maintenance plan. Like, we're going to spread things out to 6 months. I always kind of asterisk it with, but that's only if things are going well, you know, because I have had cases where they come in at 6 months, they've been doing terrible for 2 months. And I'm like, well, you should have, why didn't you come? They're like, well, you said 6 months. I'm like, yeah,
thought,
I'm like, 6 months and things are going well.
Yeah,
like I couldn't predict that this would happen to your pet. So there really is kind of that like education. And, you know, for us, same, I like to empower the owner with certain things. And I'll do kind of as needed for, I think we have a bit more freedom. Dermatology, we have so many products. So topicals are a lot of times where I can give a little bit of freedom, not necessarily steroids, but things like, you know, bathing more often if they feel like they're starting to get an infection, making sure they have certain products that they start showing signs of infection, they can get on top of it so we don't have to go on systemic antimicrobials. But definitely, I usually, besides topicals, really try to be pretty like direct with what I want them to do, or say, hey, try this. If it doesn't work, let me know. So then we can make that adjustment. And the last thing I wanted to ask you about, ulcers always kind of freak me out a bit. I think that's what I think of when I think of like opto. I'm like, ulcers, they can be superficial. They can, your eye, you know, you have a dysmenorrhea and your eye could be about ready to come apart. So whenever, and we see them some, right? Because we do get the traumatic ones, and I'll stain them and treat them to some point unless it's getting, you know, more deep. But just thinking about like ulcers in general. So I've had a couple of cases where optha will see them for their eye. They've got, I have this Frenchie, of course, that had like bilateral corneal ulcerations. And it seemed like it was mostly from his allergic skin disease, had like really swollen periocular region. And they came to see me. They'd already kind of got the corneal ulcers were there, but they were doing okay. And I remember thinking in my head, like, this dog needs steroids. Like, this dog needs steroids now. You know, they're already doing some of the other anti-itch stuff. And so I recall the ophthalmologist and I'm like, I just want to like check in as you're treating bilateral corneal ulcers. Like, I really feel like this dog probably needs oral steroids. And she was like, oh, yeah, great. I wanted you to start them on oral steroids. And I was kind of like, oh, is that stupid that I was worried about starting this case on oral steroids? So give me like your thought with some of these like traumatic ulcers, you know, topical. You know, I always hear like ulcers, we don't want like steroids in the topicals, but then they were fine with me doing systemic. What are kind of your thoughts on that?
That's a great question. I think I have a post about steroids, just in general, topical steroids. Oh, why we don't use topical steroids with corneal ulcers in dogs, I guess in cats too. But in that making of that video, kind of going back to our literature, systemic steroids have not been associated with worsening of corneal disease, of corneal ulcers, thankfully. But a topical steroid has definitely been linked to worsening ulcers, predisposing to infection, inducing collagenolysis of your corneal tissue, which is going to lead to dead metaseals or perforations. So for me, if they have a corneal ulcer and they need, quote unquote, need a topical steroid of some kind, I would reach for an NSAID more so than a topical steroid. In humans, in topical NSAIDs, there are several papers that will link corneal melting to topical NSAID use with ulcers. But the literature is kind of not as robust in veterinary medicine, linking those two together. I know that in my residency training and afterwards, if I have a cataract surgery patient, and it needs topical steroids after cataract surgery, but for some reason it develops an ulcer, I reach for an NSAID, you know, because they need some type of topical anti-inflammatory. And those dogs still did fine. You know, I think it's all with the, you know, in the back of our minds, we need to know if something's going the wrong direction. So that's where we just have to, again, educate the owners, things to look out for, what's not acceptable, what's going to renew here overnight, you know, for ER visits or something when it comes to these ulcers. So very hard no on topical steroids on the eye when you have an ulcer. Oral steroids have not been linked. I will say, you know, there are some ophthalmologists who still get nervous, especially with brachycephalic dogs, because they are just so predisposed to having horrible corneal disease from ulcers, complicated ulcers, that, you know, putting them on an oral steroid for a normal dog maybe doesn't have that type of association. But for these dogs that are already so predisposed, are we tipping them over? You know, these are all just things that I'm thinking about when I'm trying to decide the best treatment option.
Brachycephalics. They always.
And I will say, so something that I have been seeing a lot more over the past probably year and a half since I've been looking for it is canine herpes. And it's probably one of those things, just like cats, where, you know, 93% of the world's cats or whatever have feline herpes virus. It's just not all of them show clinical signs. Humans, tons of humans have herpes virus and show no clinical signs. It's the same thing, you know, for dogs, where probably most dogs have herpes virus, especially with all the contact that they have with other dogs and dog parks and wherever they go. But they just don't show signs. But French bulldogs have become the poster child, I feel like, for canine herpes virus in our field. And these are dogs that have chronic redness, chronic conjunctivitis, epiphora. They're rubbing at their faces. Sometimes they get corneal ulcers and they get worse on topical steroids. And those dogs need antivirals. And so I always try and think about that, because I have had a few Frenchies specifically who they came in the door and they've been on topical steroids off and on, but it never did anything per the owners. And I was like, we're going to test your dog for herpes virus, and they'll come up positive. And I put them on a topical antiviral, and they get better. So again, it's kind of one of those, we're going to use this as a diagnostic because, you know, a cat can test positive for herpes but not show any clinical signs. So could a dog test positive for herpes and not have clinical signs? So there's all these unknowns, I would say. So again, I'm using their response as a as an indicator of what disease we're dealing with. But usually they respond fairly quickly. I think the last one I had within probably 3 days, I mean, he looked almost normal once he was started on his antiviral. So that's something that I always consider with these chronic redness cases now. You know, there are some conjunctival swabs you can submit for IFA testing for Canine herpes virus.
And do you have to treat them more long term for that?
Yes. Yeah, so usually, I mean, for I kind of base it off of cats, frankly, but for cats, I treat them 3 to 4 weeks with their antiviral, and then we kind of stop and see what happens because herpes virus likes to flare, just like in cats, with stress, whether that's external or from something inside you messing with your immune system. Then we kind of have to play a little bit by ear on what that long-term management is going to look like.
Awesome. Well, with that, Dr. Sigmund, you have made it to the end of the DermVet podcast.
Excellent.
It was so wonderful having you on and hearing all of your insight. Once again, I just want to remind people that you are the Vet Eye Guy on Instagram. And then you do have some like teleconsulting and things that you do that people can reach you through your Instagram, correct?
Yes, that's correct. So you can just send me a DM on Instagram and I can get you more information about teleconsults. But usually you send me a bunch of pictures, any lab work, any diagnostics you've done, and I provide you a report usually within about 24 hours.
Awesome. Well, go check him out if you have any difficult eye cases for sure. And I just want to thank you for being on the podcast. It's been great just to hear a little bit more about some of these periocular diseases, conjunctivitis, and I really appreciate your expertise.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Well, wasn't that a wonderful conversation? Thank you so much, Dr. Sigmund, for being on the podcast today. Please go check him out at The Vet Eye Guy. And again, you can reach out to him if you have any cases that you'd want to consult on. Please, if you enjoy the podcast, continue providing reviews. It really helps us to get out to more listeners so we can continue to provide great veterinary education content.